Hello and welcome to the GWL at 30 podcast series. Developed and recorded by volunteers, this podcast sheds light on our history and celebrates our 30 years of work across six main themes: accessibility, green, LGBTQ+, anti-racism, violence against women, and changemaking. In this episode, our volunteers chat with colleagues from senior management, our BME project, and our national outreach team about the ways anti-racist work has been a core element of GWL over the last 30 years.
Welcome to this GWL podcast on the library's anti-racist work. My name is Joy, and I've been a member of the library since the 90s and volunteering for the last few years.
My name's Niamh, and I've been volunteering since December 2022.
My name's Adele, and I'm one of the two co-directors at the Women's Library.
My name is Lil, and I'm one of two engagement and outreach development workers at the library.
My name is Saima Ahmed, and I am the BME development worker at the Women's Library.
So Adele, our first question is, GWL was brought into existence in the 90s by white women in what was predominantly a white city, but was anti-racism work nevertheless already present in those very early days?
I think our awareness and understanding about what anti-racism means is always in development, but thinking back to the late 1980s, when the Women's Library started, I know that there were women involved who had been involved in anti-racism work in Glasgow and in Scotland since the 60s. So there were some incredible elders who were involved in the library's work. And I suppose when we're thinking about the 30th anniversary reflection, and these podcasts are obviously a part of that, I think it's interesting that we chose to reflect on some of the threads that we thought had been part of our library work right from the start. And I suppose this idea of countering the narrative of white supremacy, or I think the sort of pale male stale sort of set up in culture in Glasgow, that was the orthodoxy really in Glasgow in the 80s. So I know that it was very much a part of our thinking to do something different and to try and change it up. And I suppose when I'm thinking about what form did that take, I think we were definitely trying to work intersectionally, although that term, Kimberly Crenshaw hadn't sort of like coined that term, I think that was sort of 89 or whatever, but we were sort of definitely trying to think about how people were subject to racism, how classism, how different barriers were definitely in place, sexuality, disability and so on, for very many people in the city, and that maybe we could do something to change that. So I remember being very excited about this remarkable person called Valerie Mason John, who was the author of, I think, 10 books now, but the author of Sindykes and Brown Girls in the Ring, had agreed to come and do a performance with us in our 1990 festival, and that just been a really exciting thing, but just sort of thinking there was nothing really happening that felt like that in the city at the time. So I'd say that we were on a steep learning curve, but it was definitely something that we were thinking about and we were trying to organise around and try to programme around as well.
So since those very early days, there have been several turning points that were really important for the library's development, and having its first paid employees was one of those turning points. So could you maybe say something now about the thinking behind deciding to employ someone to work specifically with women of colour, even before a librarian had been appointed, and then maybe how it felt to be that person?
I think it's really important to hear Saima speaking about this because she is that person. but I suppose the lead up to sort of like having the capacity to sort of have a post that was sort of explicitly around tackling some of the issues that we were contending with in our organisation and also sort of in the city was the closure of another project that was for women of colour called Meridian. And that was pretty catastrophic for lots of the women that we were in contact with and some staff as well that we knew were working in Meridian. And the council had asked us, could we have the Meridian collection? In fact, I don't know even if they asked us about the collection. I think we asked about the collection, but there was sort of more or less saying, can you do it, and can you do it for less money? So obviously that was a difficult conversation because we couldn't do what Meridian did. But what we did want to do was to think about a way that we could sustain the ESOL group that was meeting at Meridian, but also sort of talk to them about having a worker, because originally I think they weren't going to give us a worker to sort of work with this collection and do this work. So we did manage to argue to get a role within the Women's Library that wasn't Meridian Mark II, but was like a totally different project, but also that we did have the archive as well was sort of part of the deal. So that was really a fundamentally life-changing thing for the organisation. Because Saima was employed.
So, I started in 2007, and I think at that point GWL was at its pivotal moment. And just like many third sector organisations, when you're starting from scratch, you know, and from inception, you have a very few resources in place. But what I found with GWL, you know, they understood the ask, they knew, you know, things like intersectionality wasn't a word, it was a word then, but it wasn't well understood. And but in terms of inclusivity and inequality, they understood that very well. And what they had was immense passion and a drive to make a difference. So that's what I felt coming into the role. And Meridian was an exciting project. When I looked into the archive initially, I understood the extent of work that took place under that one roof. There were women coming from all walks of life, and it was just it was an opening for women at that period. And they were born roughly the same time as GWL, sort of over 30 years ago. And it was just amazing to see, like, you know, GWL was coming into inception, and so was a BME women's organisation. And so what I found was that the main focus then was just to get, you know, women, you know, coming together, learning, connecting, and vocational skills was very important during that time because many women felt that that's something that they couldn't do in terms of education, and now they felt that this was their time. So doing some courses like how to, you know, gain employment, all these things were important then. And so there's so much that took place and wonderful work, including marking International Women's Day every year with lots of celebration. And sadly, it came to an end. And when I came into post, it was that huge ask of, like, you know, you're going to take this work forward. But I understood that there was various strands that I can take forward, and looking at the objectives of GWL, empowering women to have a voice, inequalities women face, that was something that was personal to me myself, coming from a migrant background. I understood that the women in my family, for example, what barriers they faced, and how our stories weren't included as part of the Scottish story. So there's a lot of work to get done, but I was really excited. And some of my initial projects included exploring women's history. The project I first conducted was the She Settles in the Shields project, and it took place in a sort of multicultural area in Glasgow at Pollock Shields. And again, that was all about, you know, who these migrant women were, you know, where they came from, why they came to Scotland, their contributions to society. That was like it was the first time women felt they were being heard, but also they didn't want to be misrepresented. They weren't sure where the stories, how the stories are going to be understood, who's going to hear the stories. So there was a lot of building trust that had to take place in the early, in those early days. But at the end, when the project all came to an end, we had a book with those stories, lovely photos and artefacts, and a travelling exhibition. And I think I remember at the launch event, and Adele, you were there as well, it just felt like a real celebration. They got it, you know, even at first they weren't sure, but they really got, this is about us. And I was really pleased that we were able to distribute the books across Glasgow libraries, but again, getting that those stories out. And again, that's all sort of comes back to like sort of those bits of anti-racist work that's already embedded in the work that we're doing. But I think over the years we've become better at understanding, that's, you know, that is anti-racist work. You know, we are doing the work already, but we just need to sort of, you know, acknowledge it. And then just when we're planning and programming our events, just to be sort of more mindful of it. Actually, we want to include, you know, we want to be a bit doing more of this work. And yeah, so those were my early days, and I really enjoyed like sort of getting stuck in, stuck in. And yeah, I've been there, been here ever since, and doing lots more wonderful work.
Amazing. Lil and Simon, could you tell us something about the work that you're currently doing?
Sure. Yeah. Shall I go? Do you want to go first?
No. I think I can have a break.
A lot of history to cover. Yes, so in my role, I took over coordinating and facilitating this community called Readers of Colour, and that was started by, in about 2018, I believe, by Nadine Aisha Jassat, who's an author and writer living in Edinburgh. And it started out as this group that would gather in a bookshop in Edinburgh, and then when the pandemic happened, it moved online, and it's this sort of bubbling, growing group of people, women and non-binary people of colour, who come together to specifically read books by women of colour and non-binary people of colour. And yeah, it sort of, when I came for the interview and I was reading and looking into it, the interview to step into my role, is understanding it as not just a book group where it's super literary or anything like that, but a point where you can kind of jump off into discussions and have a space to kind of talk broadly without having to prove a point, which, yeah, is an odd feeling. So part of the work that I've done in stepping into this role is continuing that group. So it's now expanded slightly. You know, we've gone from, I came in, there was about 60 members on the list, and now we've sort of about 120, and we meet in Edinburgh and Glasgow and online. And it's really nice because, I don't know, at this library, so many people come through as like placement students and things like that, and then a lot of them have stayed on to then come to the online groups when they've moved on from Glasgow or something like that. And it's really felt like, oh, hang on a second, you know, GWL/Scotland and the places that we're working in can be a central point for discussion of literature, as in a place where everything is very like centralised in London, and that's where stuff is happening. It's really nice to feel like we're creating a centre point. You know, the other day we had an online session and there were people joining us from Fife and Glasgow and Edinburgh, but also London and Bournemouth and Maryland and the USA and India. And it's like having that in the room kind of represents, like, I think the trajectory of GWL's work being both like very hyperlocal but like quite an important hub for people of marginalised genders to write and their work. So my amazing job is to coordinate and grow that group and facilitate it. And then recently I've been stepping into more developing reading out loud
as an act itself. So we recently went on a group school trip with the Readers of Colour. So it was really nice because people from online and Edinburgh and Glasgow could all meet, and we went to Stirling Castle and we read. So we read out loud works by women of colour about castles, and kind of overlaid them at different points in the site. And so, yeah, it's really exciting to see reading and who you're reading as something, as a really powerful tool. So, yeah, that's the work that I get to do here.
I'm working on a number of projects, so I'll just mention a few. The partition project is just a follow-on from the partition project that we did last year, and that was exploring stories of South Asian women who experienced, or sort of the generation that followed the partition of India in 1948. And the story is huge, but in terms of being in Britain, not much has been documented or acknowledged. In schools, much was covered that part of history for obvious reasons. So we were interested in looking at the stories of women over the past 5 years in terms of the partition in general. That's been explored by various South Asian communities across Britain, but it's only this past year that we've been looking at women's stories, because again, women's stories are marginalised, and women's bodies were used as a weapon of war during that period, and the intergenerational trauma that followed, that trickled down generations. And I'm sort of, you know, I'm part of that, you know, I'm part of that community. I can see how that's impacted us. So we did this huge project last year, which came together as an animation film, which has been sort of, you know, going across the globe at various film festivals, just to get the awareness out and women's voices out there. But there's a lot of work to follow as a result of the work we did. It doesn't end there, it was just like a starting point. So I'm making various developments with our partners. We do work in a lot of partnership with groups locally and nationally and globally as well. So this particular partnership is with the University of Northumbria, and I'm working with this wonderful woman, Dr. Nafisa Ali. So we're putting together further developments to conduct further work in this area. And obviously with these things, there's again, funding's an issue, resourcing, but that's something that Dr. Nafisa is able to put in place. And once that's done, we'll be able to conduct further work working with other groups as well. And again, we want to, you know, we use creativity, a lot of creativity in the work we do. So last year was animation. This year and, you know, next year we could be looking at other types of creative outputs. But again, it's just having a space for women to come together, to share, to understand, and get their voices out in various creative mediums. So that's one project. But another one very quickly is being sort of in post. For the last 17 years, I've seen these BME women's groups across Scotland evolving and growing. And as a matter of fact, a lot of them have been operating for 20 years or 10 years, they've not documented much. So I've said, right, this is it. This is the time now. You're marking your 20 years. We've just marked our 30 years. Let's document your story. So there's a lot of work now that I'm doing around that, and in particular, a group called Sakina Group, which I'm currently working with, and they've been going for over 10 years. There's actually a dispute in when they actually started, and this is why it's important to document. There's a huge uproar, like, no, it's been 10 years, it's been 15 years, but anyway, we'll get to the bottom of it. But again, it's about women sort of sharing the story of how they started, what was the importance of bringing a group like Sakina together, which is over 60s South Asian women's group that come together for learning and supporting one another. So they will be having their celebration event in June. So I'm really busy with that. And I will also be, I'm also working on a She Settles and She Heals Part 2 project, which is looking at another area in Glasgow, well, East Renfrewshire, but again, a group of women, migrant women from the area, have come forward and they want to document their stories, something similar to She Settles in the Shields, but, and they've called on us to come forward to help and guide them in the process. So there's lots of things happening currently and keeping me busy.
Oh, good to hear there about how women's voices are being heard. What about the library's collections? How do they reflect and highlight those voices?
I think as Simon's just been alluding to, I mean, there's lots and lots of work to be done to gather the materials that almost like give evidence to the fact of all this labour and work that's been happening over decades and decades that people of colour have been actually manifesting in their efforts to sort of create spaces, to make creative works, to work together to effect change. And we do have some collections, we mentioned Meridian earlier on, but also through our acquisition of the Lesbian Archive, which again came to us, I suppose it's the fate of a lot of collections from groups over the years. We've collected lots of materials because projects have had their funding cut. You know, it's something that is a political issue. But one of the collections that came to us through the Lesbian Archive was the Camden Black Lesbian Group materials. And I mean, this is sort of like just a phenomenal body of remarkable photographs and campaigning materials and records, and that is a collection that I think is almost like just as Lil's talking about, like, I know that there might be issues about that not being in London, but the Lesbian Archive here, having it here, I think is a statement about you know, the idea of maybe these sort of countercultural histories being somewhere other than in London, I think is really important. And the Lesbian Archive collection represents lots of Scottish Black lesbians as well as women from all over the world. There are some sort of like sobering records. For example, these fragments from creators like Ponso, who we've just managed to almost like re-inscribe a work that Ponso was a Scottish Chinese artist who is unfortunately no longer with us, had made a sort of intervention, almost like the way that our responders of colour have been working in the library in recent years. Pam had sort of felt like the representation of Chinese women was not evident in our space. And made this sort of really wonderful, powerful intervention literally in the library space on the files and actually on the window with this particular sort of vinyl work, which is on our website. But we've just re-inscribed it. It was originally in our Trongate space as part of our 30th anniversary work. But gives me a sense of profound sadness that we don't have Pam's work in our collection, and there's lots and lots of other work that we would like to have here. And I suppose not ever having an acquisitions budget has meant that it's relied on the kindness and generosity of women of colour over the years who have given us remarkable things. But that's not something that I would like to see has been the only way forward in terms of things coming into our collection. I would like to be able to pay people for their work and have it properly, you know, things that were requiring people being properly remunerated. But I think within the library, the London Library and Reference Library, I think we're seeing more of the sort of incredible array of different skills, knowledge, ideas, creativity by women of colour, whether that's as poets, novelists, researchers, campaigners, and I suppose sort of new things are always being generated, like the Response of Colour made a remarkable publication. Simon's mentioned the publication she's made, commissioned Jocelyn Cowell made a remarkable book for us. So there are things, as it were, being generated from within the library. But it's a source of sadness to me that there's not more substantive collections and records. I'm hoping that the type of work that both Simon and Lil have been doing and those projects that we're working on doing in the future will help us fill these enormous gaps as well in our collection.
It often feels as if anti-racist work is very much embedded in everything GWL does. But what do you think have been some of the difficulties, frustrations, or even failures?
I think it kind of ties into what Adele's saying with this, we're not operating in a bubble, I suppose. So you want to, if you have a collection that is donation only and also kind of reliant on what publishers are choosing to publish as well, you've kind of got two barriers or frustrations there of, say, you know, we have a reading list from 2023 of what we read for readers of colour. Some of those things are already texts on the shelves. Some of those things aren't, and they go on a wish list of things we'd like to have here. And so there's a frustration there of like, oh, it would be great if everything that we wanted to read was accessible here on these shelves. And sometimes they're not. So, but then that's also an issue with access and distribution around different voices. So you're also beholden to trends in publishing. So it's kind of like a two-pronged frustration, right? I think that by gathering as a group and gathering in numbers and saying, this is what we want to read. So for example, when I first met the group and was kind of consulting with them on what do you want to be reading, there was definitely a shift like and a desire to read books that carry some kind of joy, because there is often a lot of trending towards in publishing, like selling stories of trauma, basically. And it's really important that those stories are out there. That is necessary, absolutely. But there's so much more to being a woman of colour or a non-binary person of colour than your pain. Sorry.
It's getting me a bit emotional. But yeah, and I think sometimes it would be nice to, like, yeah, have more support for that. And I think the group really does support each other very well in doing that. And I know whenever I like walk past Simon's events, you know, you're holding space for these incredible things, but there's also just like laughter in the corner. So I think that sometimes that can be the frustration and the difficulty in terms of holding that line. I think generally other projects are very, and all the workers here are very mindful of like asking themselves a question of like, okay, we want to do this project, how can we make it anti-racist? But it's often more than just having a representation of people involved in a project. It's also thinking long term and what are the particular challenges that are gonna stop people kind of getting involved or speaking up. So, for example, like I might anecdotally have several people who, you know, people are kind of saying to me, oh, I'd like this to change at the library. And then feeling like, okay, I need to relay that. And so I think it's really important to create avenues so that things and change can get voiced. Because change is prickly and sometimes it hurts, but it's ultimately good. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just to echo what Lil was saying, that is certainly true with the creatives that I've worked with and women of colour that are authors or sort of emerging writers, that they face that difficulty with, you know, the same old stories that publishers want to hear, and a lot of them stumble upon like, how do I go about publishing my book? Should I go self-publishing? And if I do, it's, you know, you're on your own. How do you, you know, otherwise it's, you know, they want to portray the top stories, like, you know, certain communities are oppressed, or, you know, Muslim women this, or it could be all sorts of things, but then you've got these wonderful creatives, women of colour, writers that are coming forward, and it's their writing, their experience, whatever they want to write about, it's not, you know, it's what their interests are, but they don't necessarily get to it's not easy for them to then go carry their story forward, because it's publishers want certain things, they want to see certain topics coming forward. So I think again that systemic kind of structural racism in these organisations, that needs to still, there's still work to be done, you know. So certainly when we're working with people when they're coming forward, it's about them sort of supporting them. And we do have some wonderful women of colour creatives through the network that we've created here at the Women's Library, the collective, which is the women of colour creatives based in Scotland come together just to sort of support one another and connect. But again, through collective, there's women have come forward to give that guidance and support, and that's been quite a nice thing. But yeah, it's just those, some of these barriers that the women sort of stumble upon, and it's not pleasant, and there's a lot more work to be done.
I mean, I think that it would be great to have masses more resources, and specifically to support the organisations, and it needs to change, it needs to grow, it needs to develop, and it needs to do that. Centering the women who are most impacted by the still completely ossified, horrible structural inequalities that are evidently in place here and in the cultural setup in Glasgow and in Scotland. And I do fear the changes that are taking place. It's not like we can be complacent that all of us are edging forward, you know, at a glacial pace, albeit, you know, to sort of address some of these inequalities. I'm fearing the opposite. And I noticed one thing that I think is a really profound frustration is when you know some things that could be done better, and there are frustrations and like, how do we make that happen quickly, you know, when you're impatient for change, but know that you have to be patient at the same time. And as Lil really eloquently pointed out there, like, you know, how can you ensure that there are better mechanisms for hearing the things that you don't know and that you're not anticipating and not thinking about. But in the meantime, the ask is enormous of all my colleagues, you know, and particularly those that are sort of sitting, as it were, on the front line of hearing things and knowing that things can be different. So, I mean, I think, I know that it sounds really trite to say that money or resourcing is needed, but it is like a disproportionately big ask of my colleagues in a context where there's more and more and more trauma. We talk about shattering, you know, shattering of this sort of connective tissues between people and communities and so on and so forth. I think it's a really hostile environment out there. I suppose that's why I value the type of work that both Lil and Sam are doing, to do that work that's both about the joy and recognising the reality of people's very, very different, totally individual, unique experiences. But just that sort of feedback that Lil's getting about the work in Stirling, you know, it's just so, that's that beautiful combination of both those things, of passion and joy and sense of sort of claiming space and so on and so forth, as well as a recognition of these really complex and deeply upsetting and frustrating realities.
Given the amount of work that obviously has happened and that is still happening, and this might be a really difficult question, but what are you most proud of in GWL's anti-racist work? Simon, maybe starting.
Like I said, I think anti-racist work is embedded within GWL from the start, and I think we've just got better at it. And I think what I like about GWL is that we embrace uncomfortableness, you know, we are okay with that, and we have a passion and a drive, which is good. And over the years, I've loved the fact that we've come together to put inequalities, a diversity inclusion, like a system and a structure in place. So we're now actively looking at our programming and thinking, well, actually, you know what? Let's see where the anti-racist work is sitting, and we sort of coming to the realization here, we're doing a lot more than we think. So I think that's come about over the last number of years, so sort of pulling everything together. And even if we weren't thinking about anti-racist work, it's now that sort of structure is making us, you know, pull it together, and we're sort of on top of it. We feel a bit more confident about it. So that's been really positive. And another thing I've loved is that, you know, we've got the Equality in Progress training that's been put together by Adele and one of my ex-colleagues, Rachel. And that's something that Cape Scotland recognised, and an organisation like us, we've got, they were impressed, which is a good thing, and so they should be, with some of the, you know, the way our structure is, and our systems are, and how we conduct our work around anti-racism. So they sort of looked to us to then sort of go out and train other cultural organisations. So I was just pleased to see all that come together. And have this equality and progress that could be then sort of shared and making sort of difference in the cultural sector. And I've also really liked that we've got like a network, like collective, where we bring women of colour together, and where they're able to sort of, you know, we can sort of go to them if there's an ask about, you know, we want to do a project, you know, we want to reach out to diverse communities, you know, and I sort of call on the collective network, and I've given them opportunities and for them to come forward as well and come here, occupy our space and take part in our programming. So I'm quite glad that we're able to do that under our under the umbrella of GWL. And yeah, these are just some of many things that I feel quite pleased about, and just all the wonderful work, like I said, all my colleagues are doing, just not within the PME project only. So yeah, I'm super proud of how things have evolved over the years.
Am I going next? So full disclosure, I've been here 18 months. So yeah, I think much of what I'm, in terms of reflecting on like anti-racist work, is kind of hearing about what it's been like for people who've been involved with Readers of Colour since 2018. And I think maybe that in itself is the thing that I'm going to probably signal as like what I'm proud of, is that, or like that I'm impressed by, or like, yeah, or maybe the right word is that I appreciate, or I'm grateful for the fact that there's a durational aspect to both Simon's work and the groups as well, is that there's a commitment to something existing for a long time. And often I think projects and space are given to, you know, whether that's time, money, resources, are given to artists of colour, or like people working in the arts who are people of colour, as like a kind of, this is a temporary thing, we're going to put you on all our posters and move on. And so what I guess I would say I appreciate, and that I think is something that this library can be proud of, is committing to something for such a long time. And in its format, and not to say that it stagnates or anything, like I think we're always trying to do, especially for me, like coming as a new person, it kind of changed that dynamic. And but yeah, I think, you know, having Simon's role be the first paid role here, and then for that to continue for such a long time, is a roundabout way of saying, yeah, this stuff is durational and needs to happen for a long time, to allow it to really become part of the fabric. Sometimes things just feel very surface level. So yeah, I think that's something that the library can be very proud of. In terms of what I'm proud of in my own work, it's just, I don't know, yeah, I think there's always a moment in every single session when like thoughts are flying across the table and people are holding tea or like going for a biscuit and like connecting dots between thoughts and sharing things. And I think it's that aliveness of knowing that at one point in time there were people gathered around a table and they were exchanging ideas, and that is important. Yes. And that happened. Mm. And that happened time and time again.
I'm just so incredibly proud of my colleagues, and I'm really pleased, Lil, that you raised that point about durational stuff, because shortly after we were given an opportunity to, you know, have the Meridian thing and employ somebody, the council said stop funding the post, and I don't think we missed a beat, and we said, so, well, whatever happens, we cannot lose, you know, I can't lose Simon. But Simon, I think all the team, but Simon in particular, I think sort of at that time, you are incredibly enterprising and incredibly determined and incredibly skillful at raising funding for the project. So it's not just been like, right, okay, fund this project, you know, you've been incredibly skilled at doing that. But I suppose it's sort of underscoring the precarity for any organisation that's trying to do this work, and we're one of very many, that how incredibly difficult it is to do that with that continuity. But I feel like these are projects that are unbelievably significant, and that just as you were speaking, I was thinking that that is history in the making, you know, every single one of those sessions, it is really, really critically important, not just for the people who were around the table, but for everybody else who, after, you know, to know that this thing is happening and that it has generated these thoughts and ideas and in some instances beautiful new work. And I was thinking about, I suppose, one of the things that occurred to me at the weekend, because we've now got a Women Make Museums project that women of colour are contributing to in a remarkable way as a result of, I think, the sort of work that's been done by my colleagues, sort of like encouraging people to sort of participate and get involved and so on and so forth. But a number of years ago, Rachel, who Simon mentioned earlier on, when we first moved in here, I think it was 12 years ago, our first project was around sectarianism, because we're in an area where there's a lot of tensions and a lot of residual conflict between communities, and violence is a part of that. And there'd been no work done whatsoever on sectarianism, women and sectarianism in Scotland. Lots of films, lots of stuff about men playing football and, you know, all that type of stuff, but nothing about women and non-binary people. And Rachel did a project and interviewed lots of people, but I suppose that back to your point, Simon, about thinking, let's ask women of colour how they feel about sectarianism. So there was a group of women who did participate in that project and gave their insights. Again, it's a lot idea, you don't know these things. As a white woman, I don't know these things, I don't know what women are going to feel about this, women of colour are going to feel, and their insights and their knowledge and their experiences helped us better understand the place that we're living in, the way that people might feel about coming to the door, who are going to be, as we know now, where there is sectarian tension, there is a sort of, there can be more risks for people of colour around racist behaviours. And this weekend I was thinking about, because we had our Women in Museums inaugural meeting, and it happened to be the day that Celtic were getting the cup at the end of it. So we couldn't anticipate that there was going to be crowds and crowds of Celtic fans coming down the street here with a Rangers pub across the road. Now, it was like a beautiful moment where local white women Well, so Simon, I think there might be some research, and we knew from the research that where there is this violence happening, there's likely to be an uptick in terms of episodes of horrible racist behaviours. So we know enough now to sort of think, right, okay, organising taxes, or thinking about like reassuring people about what's happening, that we're hearing how people are feeling and so on and so forth. Now, I'd rather that didn't happen in the world, but at least we know that the risks for me walking down the road are different than for people of colour walking down the road outside of that after the event. So I suppose sometimes it's subtle things. I appreciate the labour that went into doing that research. I appreciate the knowledge that those people involved in that project shared with us. That's an act of generosity that ripples through and impacts on others further down the line. So I know these are tiny instances, but for me they are more of that sort of like, well, there's nothing like a project that came and went there. That's just about that institutional knowledge that can only be gained when those generous acts happen, but also that we are open to hearing it or asking the questions as well. So, I mean, there's a million things that my colleagues have done, and I just sort of feel like the work that Simon and Lil have done is just absolutely, utterly remarkable, you know, and we should all be really grateful, and the organisation and everybody else should be who visits the organisation that work has been done.
Yeah, when you asked the question, what are you most proud of? I was looking at Simon going, how are you going to choose? Honestly, anyone listening to this needs to go on the website and just go through back catalogue of like everything, all the projects Simon has led, because it is just mind-boggling. Yeah,
but I would say, like, you know, just in a succinct way, that what I'm probably most proud of is, like, an organisation like GWL, we come from a place of empathy and willingness to understand and do something. So I think that's what's important, and that's coming from the board level down to the staff and the volunteers. We share that same sort of ethos and our core values, and I think that's why we are sort of, we've progressed the way we have. You know, I think empathy is really important, you know, in this work and when it comes to anti-racist work, you know, so that understanding and that willingness to listen. And so that, I think, yeah, that's just, I would sort of conclude on that point.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Adele, Lil and Saima, for sharing all of that. It's been so, yeah, so interesting and really, yeah, really touching to listen to all of that really important work. So yeah, thank you so much for coming on. And thank you to Fee for doing the tech and recording, and for Ren for helping facilitate the podcast. Our next episode will be on the theme of violence against women.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the GWL at 30 podcast series. For more information about our Three Decades project, see our website and stay tuned for our next podcast.